This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Milestone Pursuit podcast. The podcast that brings you a variety of things. It brings you conversations with the elites as part of our scheme to invest in underfunded British elite marathon runners. It brings you recovery rambles, where I run easy around the lovely Epping Forest and talk about something that's on my mind. And it's the podcast that brings you the odd workout or two that you download and run along with me as if I'm there with you. If that's your thing, there's no reason why it should be. And today, it's Wednesday the 11th of May, and we've got none of those things. Actually, we've got a little bit of one of those things, because we're going to take a little trip back in time to Monday the 18th of April and the Boston Marathon. A few weeks back now, but the Boston Marathon this year, back on Patriots Day, seemed to be a bigger deal this year than it has been in recent times. Certainly seemed that way back here in the UK. Seemed to have a lot more exposure, captured the mood a little bit, captured the imagination, I think. And I think there's a number of reasons why that's the case. I think that it's the first Boston Marathon that's been held in the spring on the famous Patriots Day since 2019, so pre-pandemic. I think the fact there's no London Marathon in the spring this year means it got a bit more exposure. Perhaps a few more people from the UK entered it. And I also think the fact it was on our Easter Monday, as well as the Massachusetts Patriots Day, which meant that people weren't at work, as they might sometimes be when the Boston Marathon is held on that Monday. So got a little bit of exposure. But it did seem to be something special. Like I say, captured the imagination. So today, we're going to unpick that a little bit. And we're going to do that with a series of conversations with some people that raced. And you're going to hear them in this order. We've got Nat Rowland, member of Victoria Park Harriers. We've got Charlotte Purgy, who needs no introduction. And that's perhaps another reason why it's part of our consciousness. Just because there's a Brit finisher in the top 10. I'm going to talk to Annie Treon, long-time loyal athlete within the Milestone Pursuit. That kestrel's just flying by. Oh, look at that. That is beautiful. In the sunlight. And we've got Tracy Taylor. And we're going to bring James Brewster in at the end for a bit of chat. So we've got those five people. It's a bit of a long one. I tried to keep them short, but they kept rattling on about how amazing the Boston Marathon was. So get yourself some fuel, get yourself some chimney fire coffee, for whom or with whom this podcast is brought to you. I'm not sure that was English, but anyway, Chimney Fire Coffee are a fantastic sponsor, keeping my wife fueled each morning with her coffee. You can get your own. Visit their website, Chimney Fire Coffee, MP Pod 20, get a 20% discount off your first order. And remember, they're a sustainable company based in Surrey, sourcing their beans from all over the world with a transparent supply chain. Investment into their producers, improving the product. And they're nice people as well. And the coffee's great. Buy coffee! So, let's get into this, shall we? So the first person I'm going to introduce is Nat Rowland, who ran a PB at the Boston Marathon, 2:36, and you'll hear how he took a positive mindset into the race. Oh, he had a great experience, how he controlled the controllables and nailed his second ever marathon, to the point where he described it off air just before I pressed record on the old Zoom call. He said, to be honest, it's the best day of my life so far. So, let's hear from the man himself.
I think it's true, like, certainly best running day of my life. It's a really big event. And I planned it last year, sort of off the back of London. And I thought London went well, got myself a decent time of sort of just under 2:40. And I thought, why not go abroad? Chat with people around the office and people are like, oh, you know, Boston's a really good one to go for. And then decided to sign up for it. And I've given it a fair amount of effort. And therefore, I suppose from the start of this year, serious training block in a decent group, and found myself in a position where I'm turning up on the start line at Boston and feeling like I'm probably in the shape of my life. But to sort of take it back and like to look back at the day and feel like, why best day of my life? It's just hold up to it. And I was in Boston from the Saturday with the race on the Monday. Got there Saturday evening and then just found that, and I haven't done a lot of marathons, but found that the whole city was marathon fever. And I think it's the best thing I've ever been a part of. You know, very difficult when you're there about to run a marathon, trying not to get carried away with anything, trying your hardest to be as, you know, relaxed as possible. But I've never experienced something where a whole city is literally talking about a marathon, dressed in marathon kit, and all prepping themselves for a Monday where I suppose it's a public holiday in Massachusetts, and it's literally the only thing that's on everyone's mind. You can't go anywhere in Boston without hearing about the marathon, seeing banners about it. And I think you suddenly realise how special an occasion it actually is. And then you get to the day itself and you have a long prep for it, 3 hours to get to the start line, maybe 4 hours. Bus is difficult, but I quite enjoyed it. A long old wait, but you're on this long process to get to the start line. And then getting to a start that's 26 miles away and running 26 miles to get back to where you started, i.e. the centre of Boston. I thought, this feels like it's going to be a lonely existence. I don't know how many people I'm going to see, you know, running through. I imagine if you did this in the UK, you'd run through quite a few council estates and you'd be like, no one's here. It's not that pretty to look at. Boston, New England, Massachusetts, not the same. It's the most pretty place in the world. And the whole route is decked with very loud Americans shouting at you, shouting so many supportive words. And I just thought that was just truly amazing. And I think the fact that it's a point-to-point only adds to that. People can only watch you once. They only see people run through their area once. And therefore, they just get completely carried away, swept up in the same fever that all the runners are experiencing themselves. So I think that's the reason I said best day of my life. One, I suppose I did really well. Ran a 2:36 off a previous PB of 2:39 and felt like I'd achieved loads having done that. But I'll be honest, really, it's the whole experience. It's how special it feels within you. And I think possibly, I don't know, I may correct myself at one point in the future, but the best finish to a marathon I sort of ever experienced, you know, 600 metres. Well, maybe longer than 600 metres, maybe 2 miles of slightly downhill into the centre of Boston. And just feeling like, my word, there's a lot of people here. They're all watching me. And actually, this is so special. Somehow I've got to try and take this in while still trying to continue to put one foot in front of the other. So that's probably why I think best day of my life. Just really big experience. And I did quite well as well.
Yeah, amazing. So that's a great story. So I don't really have anything to add to that because the other thing I was going to say was the weather was amazing too, wasn't it? So that set that kind of New England scenery off a treat. The big blue skies, sunny day, not warm, obviously, it wasn't too hot. So that would have helped too. The thing that I think was particularly interesting about what you said is that the journey to the start line for you was actually part of the whole experience. because when I did it, I found this journey to the start line horrendous. Like that's sitting on those school buses with your knees tucked up into your chest for however long it is you're on that bus, and then being on the start line for ages before you're actually due off was pretty tough. I found that hard, but you obviously reveled in it.
I did. I'm a bit of a loser for schedule and routine. So I like the idea that, you know, there's one thing following another and it's all set out for me and I can follow it almost on a map and it puts me in a place. But I think actually, like, I think the start time is 10 a.m. on a marathon. There's no way I'm going to wake up at 5 or 6 or whatever. And then I've got to somehow remain calm for the rest of the day and pass time. And I certainly, if I contrast it to London, essentially, I've stood in Greenwich Park for 2.5 hours and I'm literally thinking, what on earth am I doing? Because I don't massively want to run before I do a marathon. So I'm not that keen on a warm-up at all. Whereas with Boston, you get to central Boston about 6, drop off your kit, try to get on a bus. And then you're on that bus at about 6:45. So that's a 45-minute gap. Then it's a 45-minute trip to the start line. And then it's a 45-minute, 60-minute wait in the athlete's village. Then it's a half-mile walk. So that's another 20 minutes to the start line. And then it's generally a pretty short sort of wait of, I don't know, 20 minutes, half hour, stood there watching elites go off. And that's great fun, to be fair, actually seeing them head off and the excitement of that. But I think it just allows a more steady build up towards race. Yeah. Whereas otherwise, I'm even with sort of anxiety and struggling, you know, to figure out what I'm doing. At least here, I know what I'm doing. And I think the best thing is, like, all I have to do is get to Boston, you know, Boylston Street for 6 a.m. Once that's done, literally, unless everything goes, you know, wrong from the sort of organizer's side, they're in charge of everything for me to do after that. So yeah, I'm just being funneled about.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So your controllables are all controlled by other people. You don't need to worry about anything. Whereas London, for example, you've got a bit of anxiety about getting to the start on public transport. Then you've got to drop your kit off half an hour before and all that sort of stuff. And it does become a little bit frenzied, doesn't it? Whereas that, the way you just described it, is just dead chilled because, you know, there's nothing you can do. It's all paced out for you. You don't need to worry about it. And you can focus instead on the 3 hours or 2.5 hours in your case in front of you.
Yeah. And that helps me out. And I think did have a rather overzealous bus driver is the only thing I will say. I nearly crashed on the way there. But
yeah.
But I tell you what, bus rides go, it's beautiful. Like, countryside is amazing. And I just thought, I can't wait to run through all of this. It looks beautiful. And it did help, as you said, lovely day for it, sort of low temp, but like just clear sky. But I think it was just setting up, because I've not been to Massachusetts before, I've not been to Boston before. And I was just thinking, I can see why people love this and I can't wait to get going.
Amazing. And then the race itself, you obviously ran really well, 2:34, 2:36 off a 2:39 PB. Knowing you a little bit as an athlete, I'd say there's quite a lot more in that marathon tank to come based on some of your shorter distance times. But Boston's not a quick course, is it?
No, it's not. It'll be interesting to see on a flat course what I'll do, and I guess that's the point you're getting at, it's not a flat course. It was certainly helpful talking to you beforehand, I must admit, knowing that prep yourself for a bumpy course, and I think that's the better word rather than hilly, is just bumpy. And I think therefore it does make it very difficult to get a quick time. Although that being said, I think if you go into it prepped knowing what's coming, I think you can do really well. I think that's how I felt. As I said, it'll be interesting to see what or how much I can potentially improve if I'm on a flat course. But to be honest, I felt like I ran it really well. And I'm not one that generally likes hills, but I ended up really enjoying those rolling hills sort of in and around Newton. But that comes down to prep. Knowing it's coming, you run, or you should run sort of the first 60 miles of the race with that, you know, knowledge that you're going to go through a lot of pain.
Yeah.
But I ended up finding that the hills were very manageable as a result. And that all comes to sort of maybe running within yourself right at the start. And I think I got one really good bit of insight, which is a rarity, like on the way to the start line, because usually you're getting all kinds of garbage from every other runner around you. But Boston's really cool in the sense that they stagger everyone on their number, literally on exactly the time you qualified by. So you can gauge exactly where you're meant to be starting. And then the guy next to me just said, if you run past anyone in the first 5 miles, you've gone wrong. Because you're starting with everyone around your pace. If you're running consistently past people, he was like running past anyone, you're never going to finish well. You've essentially got carried away. And sort of having that in the back of my mind for the first 5 miles, I think probably saved my race and helped me to actually finish really well. Because it therefore means that you're chasing people from 5 miles onwards and you end up in a pack of people that are running, you know, aiming for the exact same as you. And you can feel confident that actually I'm running at the pace I should be. And yeah, let's get carried away with it and really enjoy sort of the next 10 miles, which actually between 5 and 15 are so enjoyable. I'll take that advice of me going forwards completely, to be honest. So I can get myself with the right people at the start, make sure I don't get carried away. Because
I really like that. I'm going to steal that piece of insight, because that I think is a really useful way of looking at it, particularly if Boston ranks people based on their qualifying time. I guess the only thing is, if you're in much better shape than you qualified in, you might find yourself slightly further back. But actually, I think in Boston, that's fine, because it's that first 5K super fast downhill. If you went too fast, get carried away, you end up with your quads all over the place and the rest of it becomes a real battle if you've gone off too fast. So I think that's a very smart piece of insight you picked up along the way there that I'm going to add to the collection.
Yeah, I mean, you get all kinds of rubbish leading up to any kind of race you do normally. But that one was, that stuck with me. And I just thought, it was literally going through my mind for those sort of first 5 miles is, bank this, don't get carried away. And then I think once you're in that groove, and I think for me, it takes about 5 miles in sort of a marathon, then just get into that pace that you're really comfortable with and just, knock out the next 10 miles as comfortably as you can. And I think that's such, when you know that, it led to me just feeling, excellent for those 10 miles. And I had time of my life, as I said, running through some really exciting parts of the Boston Marathon. So, keep that. And very good advice of Boston is all I'd say. I'd keep that for anyone.
Yeah, cool. Brilliant. Well, thank you. I think you've told us loads about Boston that's going to be really useful and also backs up some things that other people are going to be saying or have already said, depending on where I place you in the podcast. we'll leave it there. Thanks, Nat.
Well, there you go. A memorable day for Nat. And he's got a bunch of memories that will now never leave him. A day of glory in Boston. And the same is true of our next guest, which is Charlotte. Charlotte Purdue, our elite athlete, who had a fantastic race. 2:25 around the hills of Boston. And it wasn't easy, as you'll come on to hear. She was ninth in the race, first non-African, beat all the North Americans. She'll talk about how tough the course is, and she'll also talk about her celebrity status. Let's hear what she's got to say.
Charlotte, just tell me about your race experience. You obviously had a brilliant race, finishing ninth, but let's go into a little bit more depth about how the race unfolded for you.
Yeah, so the race was, very interesting. Obviously no pacemakers, so that made it more like a championship style race. So I wasn't going for a time or anything. I was just trying to finish as high up as I could. And when the race started, everyone went off together, obviously. But we didn't like surge at all. It was all like a massive group. So all the elite women ran together for at least the first 5K. And it was pretty slow, actually. Obviously it's downhill. At least the first 5K is completely like downhill. So I wasn't going to go off too hard anyway, but we were literally jogging like so slow. It was almost like uncomfortable to run that slow.
Wasn't it 17:40 or something for the first?
Yeah, break? It was so yeah. slow. Yeah. And I was like, this is just like, it's slow for me.
Yeah.
Especially downhill as well.
Yeah.
Not expecting to run like that slow anyway. And then literally we got to 5K and got our drinks, our first drinks. And then one of the Africans, I don't know who it was, like sprinted off, and everyone, like all the Africans, tried to go with her. And it was, I think they dropped like a 4:58 mile. And so it was that, just everyone was spread out completely after that, because like that was a massive surge and I was not ready for it. I don't think anyone was. It was kind of shock. It was like a massive shock, like just at 5K, she sprinted off. And then it had to make a decision, like, do I go with them or do I stay back? And I just thought in the moment, I'm going to try and go. But there was already a gap by the time I decided this. So then I spent like the next at least 5K trying to get back onto the group. And my second 5K was actually my fastest, which was 16:19, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's pretty fast anyway, even if I wasn't running a marathon. So, yeah, my legs were pretty tired after that. And actually, I didn't even get onto the group by that point. Even that 16:19 wasn't enough to get onto the group. So then the group were ahead slightly by like 50 meters. And then it was me and Molly Seidel, who's obviously like Olympic bronze medalist. So I knew that like she's a very good athlete and I would just try to run with her then and we would maybe work our way back onto the group. And so I ran with her until we got to 12 miles and it was just me and her. We could see the group up ahead, but we weren't really catching them at all. We were just keeping the same gap. And then at 12 miles, I actually overtook her because she was slowing down a bit. And then after that, she actually dropped out. And then I was running just completely alone. The Africans were slowly getting further and further ahead of me. And then, yeah, I just ran by myself until I got to like mile 25 and I saw one of the Ethiopians ahead. And I actually went past her at mile 25. And then she sprinted past me with 50 meters to go.
Oh, no way, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but I looked her up afterwards to see who she was and stuff. And she actually finished second in the London Marathon in 2021, the one which I did, and she ran 2:17 there. So she's obviously a really good athlete. So I was like, well, you know, I almost got her. But yeah, she sprinted past me with 50 meters to go, which was a bit gutting because I thought I had her. But the course was like obviously really challenging as well. So I was proud of how I was able to keep my position, and I obviously did slow down, you can see from my splits, but obviously no one went past me, so everyone slowed down. I think like it obviously was annoying to have to run pretty much the whole of Boston Marathon alone. But the crowds were really good and that obviously helped. And the course was definitely a challenging course, like the hardest course I've ever done, just because like you said earlier, there was no flat point, so you can't. In London, I like to get in a rhythm and I like even splits and I like to obviously negative split most of my marathons, but there was no chance of that at Boston and there's no chance to get in a rhythm and you're either running uphill or downhill. And when you're running downhill, you can't even get in a rhythm because you can see the hill up ahead. So you're like preparing for the next hill. So it was really up and down. But I think it was a good experience definitely to do one of those races, but definitely the hardest marathon that I've ever run.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why it's such a brilliant performance, because it's only, let's say, only 2 minutes outside your personal best, 2:25:26. And yet the course is challenging. And I've said it before that the course profile, when you look at it on the internet, it's misleading because it shows that it's downhill, net downhill, and the little undulations don't really show up. So there's a few spikes. Everyone talks about the Newton Hills and obviously Heartbreak Hill at 20 miles. But none of them are difficult in their own right. And if you came across them on a normal run, you'd be like, well, this is nothing, not a big problem. But it's the aggregation of all of them that starts to hurt you. And Heartbreak Hill comes at the very end, or 20 miles, so it comes at the end of the hill. So you're not ready for it, or your body's kind of had enough of hills, basically. Your quads are a bit smashed from the downs, and everything's a bit hard going up as well. So to get through it and to run that fast and to hold your pace pretty much is amazing. I wonder what impact the slow first 5K actually had in a positive way.
Yeah, I don't know really, because I kind of felt like I hadn't even started. That was just like a warm up. And I felt like the race started at 5K and that I've completely forgot about that first 5K, but obviously that would have made my overall time slower. But I don't know. I obviously prefer an even pace. So that second 5K really did take it out of me. I took on way more gels than I ever have before in any other race. And I got to 12 miles and I was actually worried that I wasn't going to make it because I felt so tired. I usually get to halfway and I feel pretty good. And I'm like, okay, I've only got a half marathon now. I can either pick it up or at least maintain my pace. Whereas I honestly got to 12 miles and I was like, I am stuffed. Like my legs are so, I was so tired. And I never take caffeine at halfway, but I took caffeine at halfway And I took 3 extra gels in that race because that's how tired I was. Like, and I think it was just from that surge. Like I said, I like an even pace, and that kind of race was, yeah, really challenging because, yeah, obviously the hills take it out of you more anyway, but the effort that I put in, I feel like was 10 times more than London Marathon last year. Like, if I look back to London when I ran 2:23, like, that was kind of easy compared to Boston, and yeah, I ran 2:25 just based on the way that I ran it and stuff. So I think, yeah, looking back, it definitely took a lot more out of me than London did, but that's just the nature of the course and the way that I ran it as well.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that surging nature. So you're running some bits quicker, some bits slower. You're accessing different parts of the system, so it's becomes harder. But I will remind you, when you talk about London being easy, I know you're being flippant, but that, remember London, we spoke about that, and your last 5K in London was tough. You know, you were struggling to hold on to your pace. It's just maybe this time it's the last 20K rather than the last 5K.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like now I'm never going to complain about London having any hills or anything ever again. I honestly think, like, this changed my mindset completely of, like, a hard course. I think when I go to London now, when I see those little inclines where you run over the bridge, I'm like, that's nothing. Like, this is honestly, like, it's going to feel so good going through a flat marathon. Because, yeah, Boston was really hard, the course, definitely.
Yeah, which makes the performance all the more impressive. But let's not worry too much about that, because you know already you've had all the glory that's come with that, and quite rightly so. So, you know, first non-African, beat all the North Americans who, you know, in theory they know the course better. I don't suppose many of them had run it before either. But, you know, you've nailed you've nailed a really tough marathon, a big major, top 10 in a major. You know, it's a great run. But also, let's talk about Boston being different. So it's, you know, not just the course. The course is a factor in that, in the sense that it's point to point, it's hilly. But what, in your mind, makes Boston a different experience from other marathons you've run?
Yeah, I found, like, the whole weekend, really, there was such a buzz around the city. And being there for the weekend, obviously, they have, like, a 5K race on the Saturday, which a lot of the mass runners do. And the expo is right by, like, in the city as well. So everyone's, like, around collecting their numbers. Like, literally, if we went outside our hotel, you would see runners, like, everywhere.
Yeah.
So I felt like there was a massive buzz around it. And obviously, the race being on Patriots Day on the Monday, I didn't actually realize that Patriots Day was only for Boston. So, like, no other city in the US has Patriots Day as a holiday. Like, everyone's at work. But if you live in Boston, you get it off work. So it makes, like, everyone go out and watch the race. So I felt like it was just, yeah, like a massive party for everyone, even if you weren't running, which made it feel, yeah, really exciting, because it was just something really good to be part of. It was really cool, actually, just the buzz around the whole race.
Yeah, that's a really good point about it being Patriots Day and the obviously the public holiday. It creates a sense of occasion for everybody. So it's sort of, it's like you say, it's their big party. And the other thing that I always say to other people is that everyone who's earned the right to be there as a qualifier, which is another factor in why Boston's an amazing experience, is there for a party too. So the runners are there for a party, not in, you know, the literal sense, but in the sort of celebratory sense. And the people of Boston are there for a party as well. So it just all comes together for everyone to have a bit of a spectacular event.
Yeah. And even, like, the day after the race, everyone's, like, walking around wearing their medals. And, like, on the plane on the way home, like, there are people on the plane, like, that wore their medal the whole time. And it was just, like, crazy. Like, there's so much, yeah, like, pride around running the Boston Marathon. I'm not saying there isn't around London or anything, but I feel like a few things about London is obviously the expo is far away from the city, which is one thing. So, like, if you get your number at the expo, you're not, like, in the city of London. So you go home or whatever. Whereas in Boston, it was like the expo was right there by the finish line. And then, yeah, obviously everyone gets it off work, so everyone's coming to cheer. Whereas I feel like in London, it's like an inconvenience on a Sunday morning that the roads are shut. And, like, obviously people do come out and cheer, and it's like a massive crowd and it's amazing. But then afterwards, everyone's just back to business, like work on Monday. Whereas for Boston, it was like the whole day was off and then a massive party. And it was just like more of a, yeah, like you said, a celebration than any other race that I've ever done.
And you've raced in Japan as well. How does it compare to race marathons in Japan?
Yeah, Japan's cool too, because obviously they have a massive like running culture and it's like one of their main sports. But again, it's like didn't really compare because, yeah, I don't know, this the whole weekend was about Boston Marathon, whereas when I go to Japan, it's the same as London, really. It's just a race. It's not just a race, but it's you do the race. It's a good time when you're racing and the crowds are good. But then as soon as the race is over, it's done.
Yeah.
Whereas, like I said, before Boston, there was like the 3 days leading up where there was stuff going on and then the race and then afterwards. So, yeah, it was more like a extended celebration.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a Christmas.
Yeah. It literally did feel like that.
Yeah. And as an elite athlete, did you find yourself having to not get carried away with that? Or did you just go for it anyway and just embrace it and enjoy it?
So I kind of embraced it a little bit, but obviously I didn't want to tire myself out, but everything was so close to our hotel. I literally came out the door of our hotel and the expo was right there. So it wasn't like a massive effort to go to the expo or to walk around.
Mm.
And then at least after the race, we had like the whole day, to enjoy the celebrations, and literally everywhere you went, even if you went to the supermarket, like people were running Boston Marathon. There were signs up everywhere, like Boston Marathon finishers get free drink or something. So it was just you couldn't really escape it unless I literally locked myself in my room, but I wasn't gonna do that.
Yeah.
Definitely embraced it a bit. Adam was with me as well. He was meant to run the 5k on Saturday, but he actually pulled out of that in the end, just because he had a little niggle. But obviously I was going to watch that, so that was kind of going to be exciting. I did watch it anyway, but that was exciting to watch as well. The elite races, and obviously there's mass race as well. But even like doing shakeout runs in the days leading up to the marathon, like you'd run along the river and there was just people everywhere, and like they're all like getting ready for the race, or people would recognize me running and they would ask for a photo. So yeah, that was cool as well.
Yeah, whereas in London you go for a run the day before and no one you know, you're trying to avoid traffic and people and all that sort of stuff, and no one cares, and the dog walkers are moaning at you for getting in their way.
Yeah, literally. Sort of yeah.
That's amazing to see you like living the celebrity lifestyle for a couple of days.
Yeah, honestly, I did feel like a little bit of a celebrity. It was weird being in Boston and like getting recognized by people, but there was so many British athletes there as well.
Yeah.
And I was putting all my runs on Strava before the race, just because I felt like it, really. And people were like commenting on my Strava saying like, will you be running at this time tomorrow? I'm going to come down and see if I can see you. And I was like, oh my God. So yeah, that was cool.
Getting stalked on Strava.
Yeah, literally just for the few days to the race. But yeah, we also had a lot of athletes that me and Adam coached there. So it was cool to see them as well. It was just like a massive vibe, really, of like, yeah, loads of people. And then, like I said, on the flight on the way home, it was packed and loads of people wearing their like celebration jackets. I was actually wearing my jacket as well. And like, I was getting stopped by people like, can I have a photo? And it was just really cool.
Yeah. That's brilliant, isn't it? And you've earned that, I think, partly, you know, through the efforts over time, but also putting yourself out there. I mean, it's not an easy race for an elite athlete to run. And also the timing's not amazingly ideal because you've got summer championship races to have. So to actually put yourself out there and do it, and do well, I think it's brilliant, and you deserve everything that you get as a consequence of that, I think, from a glory perspective.
Thanks.
As long as it doesn't become too much. That's the challenge. So of course Boston for you was leading up to Eugene and the World Championship. So can you describe a marathon as a tune-up race? I don't know, but anyway, you've run it and you're fit and you're obviously strong and healthy, so it's now a question of keeping fit and strong and healthy for Eugene in a couple of months now.
Yeah, there's actually not that long to go till the World Champs. But obviously, when I did London in October, that was like my first marathon in a year and a half. So that was kind of like, I didn't know how it was going to go. Obviously, I knew training was going well, but I hadn't run one for so long. And then after London, I literally didn't take hardly any time off. I got back into training slowly, but then marathon training again, and had a massive base for this, for Boston. And so now I feel kind of in a place where like I've done so much long stuff and I've done two marathons pretty much back to back. So I do feel in a pretty good place, as in I don't feel like I need to do that much long stuff now. I feel like, as Nick says, my coach, just like topping up the tank, almost just doing like 10K half marathon training. Because I feel if I do too much like marathon training now, it'll be I'll just get slower, or it will I've done so much marathon training now without a break that I'm just going to be kind of getting my legs back and doing shorter stuff leading into the world champs. So it's kind of nice to have such a big base behind me now, two good marathons that I feel in a pretty good place.
Yeah, so that's not going to leave you, is it? So you've got that base is there. The risk if you overdo it is burnout or injury. So now just sharpen those legs up, get a bit quicker.
Exactly. It's actually nice to have such a good base and not have to cram in long runs. Like, I don't have to worry, have I done enough long runs? Because I feel like I could run a marathon any day and I would be able to complete the distance, no problem. Whereas before London last year, I was like, oh, have I done enough long runs? Because I hadn't run a marathon for so long. I was like, will I make the distance? Whereas now I know I'm going to make the distance. I just need to make sure I'm fresh and feeling good for the race and obviously keeping fit. So just ticking along and trying not to get injured is the main aim.
Great. Well done. You've done brilliantly in Boston. It's a great result. And it's also really good to hear the other side of it, which is the sort of the way that Boston impacts upon you as an athlete, not just the performance side of it, the way that you are as a runner. It's a big event that's central to your world. And good luck with the training from here on in.
Thanks very much.
And obviously good luck in Eugene.
Thanks.
Fantastic. What a performance and what a setup for Charlotte going into Eugene. And Boston brought the superstar out in her. Superhero. Being a superhero. And talking of superheroes, that's a theme in the next conversation as well. This time with Annie Trehan. How Boston makes you feel special. Annie ran 3:39. Even splits. Pretty much within half a minute or so. And she talks about the importance of pacing and enjoying the race and enjoying the celebration that is the Boston Marathon. Let's hear from Annie.
So Annie, just tell me about your race experience in Boston. How did it go for you?
So in a word, it was a really good experience. I think, in many ways, I didn't know what to expect. You just have this kind of buildup of the day that, it's iconic. It's a major, it's overseas. It's this oldest marathon, ever. But I think the way I tried to approach it is it's still a marathon. It's still 42K and actually a pretty challenging race at that. So, from the get-go, I tried to really not to kind of let the atmosphere and the occasion overwhelm me. And the advice, I think, from Steve and from everyone who'd done it was, don't start off too fast. If this is one race where you cannot get the pacing wrong, it's this, because it's a massive downhill. So anyway, so I started really conservatively. I actually ran with an older gentleman that I met in the bathroom queue from Manchester. He was 70, I think. It was really nice. We ran together for the first probably about 15K. And then there was water every mile. So I was, because it was sunny, I kind of wanted to make sure I kept that topped up. But I had to eventually peel off to use the restroom.
A bit
too much hydration. So anyway, then I lost Peter. I never saw him again. But it was really good because we really kept each other honest. A lot of people zoomed off, but we just kept trucking. And then when you get to, when you're hitting your splits and you're feeling good in a marathon, especially something like that, where, it's hard, it's just such a virtuous circle. And then when you get to things like Newton Hills and Heartbreak Hill, it is hard, but you're like, I've got this far and I didn't blow up and I'm not going to. It just felt so good to have a controlled race, especially in a race where the second half, I think, is a lot harder than the first, partially because of the profile, but partially because your legs are pretty destroyed already.
From the first half.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So pacing wise, it was, I think it went really well. I didn't run a PB, but I didn't set off for one, but I ran, within 12 minutes of my PB, which was really good. But I think that wasn't really the aim for me. It was always going to be a bit of a victory lap, sort of a sense of achievement. It's such a big deal to be here, especially sort of with a running journey that I've had. When I first started running, Boston wasn't even on my radar, to any extent. So the fact that I was there, then I earned a qualifying place, meant so much that I was just really determined to enjoy it. And I definitely felt like I did that.
And that's a big part of Boston, isn't it? The sense that there's a whole weekend, because the race being on Monday means that, you know, Saturday, Sunday, the whole weekend ladders up to a sense of excitement. Yeah. But everybody's earned their right to be there, haven't they?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, I've never seen anything like it. And, you know, I'm from the US, although I got into running kind of really when I lived in the UK. Even compared to other majors like that I've done, just the atmosphere, the sort of festival party feel that you've got in downtown Boston all weekend, like you said, Monday's a bank holiday for them. Everyone's wearing the jacket, everyone's getting the merch. All the shops are having, you know, shakeouts and giveaways and everything. And, you know, everyone talks to you also, like, everywhere on the metro. It doesn't matter. Oh, you're here for the marathon. That's amazing. Like, you know, doesn't matter. Just everyone strikes up a conversation. People are so friendly, and you feel really welcome. Like, I think it just adds to the whole experience. Like, yes, you're there to run, and it's this great event. But I mean, Boston just takes it to another level. I think the people of Boston.
Yeah, I agree. It's like you're operating like a superhero all weekend, aren't you? You're kind of
definitely.
And it's like however many thousand superheroes all over the place as well.
Absolutely, yeah. If you've got any merchandise on, like, I actually didn't buy a jacket personally, but I had a bobble hat from the virtual Boston. You know, you put that on, and yeah, it just singles you out amongst you know, all these thousands of other people, and you know, you're just instant friends. Everyone kind of bonds, and I think again, it's an American thing to some degree, because people do just strike up conversations a lot more readily. You know, just ask you all kinds of questions, really.
yeah, which is funny, because for a normal Brit, we're kind of a bit reserved. We don't like that. We don't like people kind of bothering us when we've got a race to run. Because it can be, like you said earlier, it can be a bit overwhelming and daunting. But equally, you can really feed off it, can't you?
Yeah, I think you can. Exactly. And it just depends on, I suppose, what mood you're in, what your personality is. But if you go somewhere like Boston, I think I would just say try your best to embrace it, because, as you say, you do feed off of it. It's all part of the enjoyment and kind of making your day so much kind of more next level, really.
Mm-hmm. And during the race, how does it compare to, say, London on the course now? So when you're out and about, is it, my recollection of doing it is it's, which is a bit hazy because I didn't have a brilliant race, but it's, there's a series of small towns on the way to Boston, and each town has its own party and does something different. So it's not quite wall to wall all the way, but pretty much is pretty close to that.
Yeah, I think that's right. What I really loved about it is point to point, you get to see so much of sort of rural Massachusetts. Like, some of the towns are really tiny, some of them are a bit bigger, but people are out. It's a bank holiday for them. People are drinking. You know, kids are out of school, and it is pretty constant. Like, I don't really remember too many stretches where there weren't people. People have got flags. People have got, like, all kinds of posters. I think Americans really go over the top with posters as well. Just kind of funny sayings. There was, like, a Will Smith poster that everyone was encouraged to slap. So that was that was pretty funny. Yeah, the support was really good. You know, there's so many kind of unofficial food stations where people are giving you water, giving you ice lollies. I think everyone just is like, wants to be a part of it. And it was also quite cool because this year was the 50th anniversary that women were legally allowed to run. Which is pretty wild, because that's not very long ago. At all. And actually, from what I saw in the kind of the comms and stuff, one of these women actually ran this year.
Yeah,
there were eight women that first year, and one of them did run this year, which is pretty cool. But it just, you know, someone else gave me a statistic that apparently the field was actually, I think, about 56% women this year. Which was really neat. And maybe it was where I was in the field and in the seating, but around me there were certainly loads and loads and loads of women. That was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool, isn't it? So you get to you get through the race, and you had a good experience. So what made the experience so good for you? What was the key thing that you would say was so special?
I think just for me, like, what always makes a marathon feel good and feel like a success is finishing strong. feeling like I didn't fall apart, because when you do, and I've certainly had plenty of marathons where I have, I just simply don't remember, like, let's say the last 10K or something like that. Whereas I can honestly say, and you know, the memory gets hazier as you get farther away from the day, but I can honestly say I remember most towns. I remember most of the scenery, even when you get into Boston. Once you pass Heartbreak Hill, there's a few part like the Citgo sign and stuff. Like, it's not particularly scenic, but you know that you've got less than 10K to go. There's people everywhere. It's downhill again, which helps kind of aerobically. So I think just having a really like solid, clear memory of what I've built up in my mind as this awesome race, and having it live up to that, I think that was that's the success for me. The thing that contributed to that was training, but also just, again, like good pacing and just making sure that you respect the race and you respect the course, because it's not like London at all. In fact, like I've heard it said that, you know, you can't count world records and stuff on that course. I think, to be honest, if someone can set a world record on that course, they can have it, because I think it's a million times harder than a flat course. So,
historically, there have been some fast times run, but with the following wind. So if the wind blows in the right direction and it's net downhill, it can be really fast. But
that's fair enough. Yeah.
But it still hurts, right? Because you've got the downs. Yeah. And that's the key thing. It's not the uphills that necessarily hurt you, it's the downs, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah. Like when you get to Heartbreak Hill, you know, it is a hill, but it's not anything really in and of itself. It's just the fact that you're so destroyed after 20 miles of downs that, yeah, it is quite hard. But yeah, so what made it a success? I think just a strong run where I can look back and be like, yeah, this was a fantastic experience. I have nothing but good memories of it. I would 100% come back.
And the pacing bit is absolutely critical in any marathon. We always talk about that, but in Boston in particular, because it's so easy to get carried away early on down the hill and to run too fast over the hills that leaves you with nothing towards the end, because there isn't much you can prepare for it. I think people, you look at profile map and it doesn't look that hilly when you look at a profile map.
Yeah, definitely.
But it undulates the whole way, doesn't it? Pretty much until Heartbreak Hill. It's like up or down almost constantly.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, there's very little that's actually flat. And I think spot on, like you need to get your pacing right. And also to the extent that you can, you know, it's a bit tricky where we live in East London, for example, but the more you can just have like rolling hills for your long runs, you know, the better, because you just need that sensation of just kind of trashed quads basically at about mile 20 to prepare you for that. And it's very easy to set off too fast. As you say, it's a big drop, you know, the hype is there, the momentum is there. Everyone's like, you know, adrenaline through the roof. Yeah. So you just really got to like rein it in, find someone old and sensible that will, keep you in check.
What was his name? Peter from Manchester.
Peter from Manchester. Yeah. Great guy.
Yeah. Let's look Peter from Manchester up and get him to run with everybody.
Yeah.
Had he run it before? Did he know?
I think he had done it before. Yeah. And actually he'd done Manchester only what, like 2 or 3 weeks prior.
All right, yeah, cool.
So it was pretty good going. So I think he struggled a bit from in the end from what I could tell, but I think it was still a really strong run considering, you know, he probably wasn't fully recovered.
And did you run even splits?
I ran very close to even splits. I did have a positive split, but it was about 25 seconds.
Yeah.
So on a course. Yeah, pretty even. So yeah, pretty proud of that, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely something for you to take away, I think, is the sense that you held back, you managed yourself really well across a difficult course and probably ran it better than the majority of people who ran it. I mean, I don't know what the stats are like, but my guess is the positive splits win by some margin. And so to run even splits, enjoy the experience, finish strong. Amazing.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, like honestly, I couldn't have asked for much more. And like you said, early on, it was a beautiful day. It was cold, but sunny. You know, there was a bit of a headwind at parts, but it was really nothing. Like it was a pretty perfect day. So yeah, couldn't have asked for much more, really.
So that really was all about setting yourself up to have an enjoyable experience. Marathon is hard, but it can still be enjoyable and it can provide amazing experiences, ones that never leave you. And she talked a lot there about enjoying the atmosphere, enjoying the hype. And in our next conversation with Tracy Taylor, who ran 4:15 or so, an experienced marathoner, a veteran of the circuit, in a good way. She talks about the hype in a slightly different way, and how it might be a little overwhelming, certainly if you're not prepared for it, and how she won't be returning. Controversial. Now, a little health warning, literally, on this one, is that Tracy works at the NHS, and I think she had the window open by the ambulance bay, because there's quite a lot of loud sirenage going off in the middle of this one. Adds to the experience. Let's listen to Tracy.
Okay, so Tracy, tell me about your race experience in Boston.
Yeah, so the actual race itself, on race day, I was really pleased with the whole experience. I loved it, except for maybe when you're sitting on the coach and kind of realising I'd never done a point-to-point marathon before. And when you get on the coaches, I was thinking, oh, yeah, it'd be about half an hour. And it was about an hour and a half.
Yeah, it's a long way, isn't it?
And it's just going and it's motoring and you're thinking, oh, my God, I've got to run this back. It just seemed to go on and on and on. And so it daunted me a little bit. And it meant that I arrived there and more or less set off when I got there, which I liked. I don't like hanging around. It was a beautiful day, which was kind of unexpected. And some things about that, like I was completely prepared. I always run in vest and shorts. And the day before, I'd been hearing all these people, they were kind of spooking me a bit, talking about whether they'd wear base layers or not and long trousers. And I was thinking, oh, you know, it might be really cold, because it was actually cold and windy the day before. Mm. And it was absolutely perfect setting. And the race itself, I can say I really loved it. It felt great to be running along. But my pacing and stuff like that was just all over the shop. And really, I had my new shoes on and I trusted in those. And my strategy really was to run as fast as you can when you can. Try not to walk at all, even on the hills. Watch out for those hills. Save something for them. And don't stop. And I did stick to that, actually. I didn't stop at all, other than scheduled drink stop to mix my drink up and get going again.
Yeah.
And I was pleased with that. And I really liked the whole atmosphere was great. Yeah, it was a really unique. I mean, you're running through strange parts of America, really, and seeing strange things, you know, big Trump flags, and there are all sorts of unusual things that can keep you occupied. And I can honestly say for the first 15 miles, the miles were just tick, tick, tick. Oh, yeah, you're 15 miles. And I knew 15 miles is when the hills come. But there'd been hills. What surprised me was it was just hills all the way through.
Yeah,
I don't
even know
why they say 15 to 21, because you finish 21 and then you can see another hill coming up and it's like that to the end.
Yeah, that's a regular theme. So with all the people I've spoken to about it, and including my own experience of it, is you look at the profile map and it looks like it's neck downhill and it's all right. And there's a few spikes, Newton Hills, Heartbreak Hill. But the reality is it's hilly the whole way, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. And definitely that downhill. I love downhills, but that was really hard. And, you know, I'd got holes in my socks. So, there was something unusual about the running downhill and people were saying they'd lost their toenails and things.
But yeah. The foot moves forward in the shoe and bashes the front of the shoe.
Yes.
And obviously the running style changes. Did you get blisters as well as the holes in the socks?
No, just holes in my socks, which I just thought, oh, that's weird.
That is weird.
Yeah. Yeah, so I thought the race itself was great and we couldn't have better conditions. I really loved it in a funny sort of way. I lost my good for age there, which I knew that I was going to do that anyway, but, you know, that was a little gutting in a way. But I honestly feel on the day I did the best that I could do and I enjoyed it. So that you have to take that from it, really, don't you?
Yeah, and obviously you'd run fast enough to qualify in the first place.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, there's that validation of being there is a sort of a success in its own right, isn't it? Because you have to qualify.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So that's really good for me.
So what in your mind sets it apart from London, let's say, or other marathons? Because you've obviously run quite a few marathons all over the place. What sets it apart?
To me, it's the hype. I mean, it's pretty crazy over there. Not, I mean, London's not like that.
No.
The people are crazy. The American people are completely crazy. And they just, in the hotel and everything, everybody's all hyped up and they're buying loads and loads of every Boston thing that you can buy. And you go to the expo and they're selling out of this. And, but, oh, I've got this. And everybody's walking around in their jackets. And it's just crazy. And the Boston natives too, they seem to be as crazy as about it as well. And everybody's wearing them. It's a different level of hypeness to any of the other city. You know, even the American cities, New York, Chicago, it's not like that. It's just a race that's going on in town. And
yeah,
you're here for the race. Whereas in Boston, it's like the big main deal. And oh, people say, oh, congratulations. Oh, well done. And they beat their horn at you as you're walking back to the hotel. And it's just, yeah, it's a real level of craziness. And
yeah,
you've done it 10 times, 20 times. How many times have you? Oh, your first time. Oh, wow, you've got a big thing coming. You'll be back. And I'm thinking, nope.
Will you be back? Do you want to go back and do it again?
No. I've done it.
You're done.
Don't want to do it again.
Moving
I don't
on.
Want to catch it that day when it's a blizzard or when it was the day before and it's windy and rainy. No, I've done it in good conditions. It was a great race. That's quite strange because other ones like Chicago, I definitely would
really? Yeah, you'd go back to Chicago. There.
Yeah,
that's interesting because I wouldn't. I've done both Boston and Chicago and I'd rather do Boston again than Chicago. But that's partly because I didn't run very well in Boston. So I'd like to, I owe it one.
Whereas, I heard that was the one where you were ill too, weren't you?
No, I wasn't ill. I was just struggling that weekend. Yeah. I just found it hard. I found the hype hard, to be honest.
Yes.
And I was on my own. And then once we got there, it was one of those weird, a bit like in this year, it was great conditions on the day, wasn't it, for you? But it was bad conditions the day before and the day after.
Yes.
And when I did it, it was the other way around. It was great conditions the day before and the day after. And on the day, it was really hot.
Mm.
It's really freakily hot. And I struggled. And I also didn't heed any of my own advice of running slowly for the first through the hills to start with. I went way too fast down the hills and got my quads all mashed up and struggled. Anyway,
yes.
So I owe Boston one. But that's what, maybe why I also find the whole Boston experience quite intriguing this year, because you know, there's, for me personally, there's a sense of unfinished business and also getting other people to understand what Boston is like, because people don't necessarily, I think everyone thinks of it as just another major, it's a flat road race with a bit of downhill, but it's not. Like you say, the hype is completely different and the course is different.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that variation in the weather is, you know, that's interesting too, isn't it? Because I know other people who were there in the blizzard and I know, you know, just all sorts of conditions. And, you know, I've got sunburn. I've got big marks where my vest was and it was a beautiful day.
If there was one thing you could say to someone going to run Boston in the future, what would you say to them?
I'd say make sure you go there early enough to actually relax and be rested and refreshed. And try to avoid all the hype, really. Just try to keep to your, because you can get some amazing sort of paranoia going on, really, because people are just like so hyped and excited and people want to give you advice, and it's usually not helpful, or it's best just to stay in your own little zone, I think, and avoid all that.
Yeah, control your controllables and don't worry about what everyone else is doing and saying.
Even like the expo, I think I was just in, get my number out, because there was just too many people shouting and
so it can be intense and it can and it can affect you in lots of ways.
Yes, I think that's what I'd say, and just enjoy it. Do the best that you can, but enjoy it mostly.
So there we go. you can hear in there that Tracy found some of that race to be a bit overwhelming. She obviously got through it and enjoyed the experience, but it's not one she's looking to return to. And marathons can be like that, big city marathons in particular can be a little bit overwhelming. And life can be a bit overwhelming too. And that brings us round to our last guest today, James Brewster, who found life a little bit overwhelming in the depth of winter this year, in December time, and suffered some quite acute mental health problems, which he doesn't go into in any detail within this, because this is about a celebration of James being back to being James again. And that celebration happened to happen on the streets of Boston, or Hopkinton to Boston. And he's made of tough stuff, he's James. He's an experienced trail and ultra runner. And he's also fast. He ran 2:53 with a negative split. But that wasn't the point for him, as you'll soon hear.
Okay, so James, tell me about your race experience in Boston. How did it go for you?
Yeah, so I think the more I think back to my experience of the day, the more I sort of take away just how great it was. I wasn't sort of approaching, I guess, Boston as like an A race or, yeah, you know, sort of my goal race for the year. I wasn't even sort of, I mean, I didn't even really have my heart set on running Boston like anytime soon. I guess having BQ'd back in October at London, I sort of thought to myself that I just couldn't let the opportunity pass. And having decided to sort of put my name in the hat for Boston, I think back in November, I started to sort of have some sort of second doubts, I think, in December about if I was able to go out to Boston and even run the race, just due to some sort of personal struggles from a mental health perspective. But having worked for all of that and sort of trained at the same time for Boston, I sort of decided that, yeah, the trip, the race itself was going to be like a celebration of becoming James again, working through those mental struggles, just getting to a much more, yeah, sort of stable place. So that obviously, I think, lifted any personal pressure to do well, and sort of meant that I think from the gun, like, I was just out there to have fun. And because I ran for the experience to have a good time, I think the performance sort of came from that. I mean, I didn't have a goal time in mind, but ended up running, it was 2:53:21, which was only a couple of minutes outside of my London time, which was a PB, 2:51 it was. It didn't feel like I was running on that pace. I felt like I was sort of running sensibly in terms of not going out too hard. But yeah, to me, it just felt like taking that pressure off myself to hit certain splits just meant it was just sort of ticking by quite easy, and yeah, it was taking care of itself. It was a really sort of an amazing experience. And I think a big part of that was just the route itself.
Your own journey.
To tackle it. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, because it's amazing, isn't it, that you can run a race like that feeling without pressure, right? So feeling like you can run how you want to run, almost because being there was the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and during the race itself, like I was doing a bit of weaving from side to side purely just so I could high five, you know, some of the spectators, the kids that were lining the street. I mean, I also read someone's like, you know, sort of race report or write up from a few years ago, and like they had mentioned like, you know, try and, you know, make conversation with those around you. And I was doing that as well. So I was chatting to other runners. Some were chatting to me, you know, sort of like, oh, I've been running by you for a few miles, just making conversation. So that in itself, yeah, I think also took my mind off of, you know, the task that was in front of me in terms of getting to that finish line. It was more of a case of just experiencing different things that, you know, contributed to the race itself.
It's almost like being aware of what was going on around you was key to you succeeding in the race, whatever success looked like. And it sounds like success for you wasn't necessarily focused on time. It was more focused on enjoying the experience and having the almost a privilege to be there.
Absolutely, yeah. I really like that that point. And that's been a big part of working through the struggles is sort of building more of an external awareness of what's around me. And that was certainly the case during the race. I wanted to take, you know, all the sights in, the sounds. It, you know, it's my first time actually also going out there to the States. So,
all right.
Yeah, I wanted to experience it all, not just the marathon itself as well.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So it's a big event, right? So the whole thing, the Boston Marathon, is very aspirational for quite a lot of people in the US. And I think as a consequence of that, it carries a big party atmosphere, not just on the day, but in the weekend leading up to it. It falling on Patriots Day, so it's always on a Monday. So you've always got a Saturday and a Sunday to build excitement. When did you get there?
So I flew out on the Thursday.
Yeah, so you were there for a few days before.
Yeah, yeah, definitely with that in mind. So, yeah, I wanted those few days before it, or to be there for those few days before it, just to soak in that build up as well. I guess try not to get too lost in it again, just because it's easy to do so, and you know, you sort of then, I suppose, could impact you know, the experience you have on race day. But you know, yeah, once I landed to getting into Boston, and then yeah, you know, dropped my bags off and just walked up to Boston Street, it's hit me straight away. I was like, well, this is Boston. Now I'm starting to get why it's so big.
Yeah, and the start line's special, isn't it? So being in Hopkinton, and it was a beautiful day, so you had bright sunshine, clear skies, kind of get a really visceral experience in a way. Like, there's a lot to take in, because I remember when I did I had a similar day. It was hotter, but it was blue skies and everything's sharp. Everything felt sharp in colour. So in terms of your taking things in, it was like really powerful. And then, like you say, on the course, you go through all the little villages and towns on the way to Boston, and there's a different thing. They're all celebrating in a different way, which makes it fun on all the way through.
Yeah, no, it's funny you said that, like it being quite crisp and bright. And I think that's something I definitely noticed, like, you know, walking to the start line was just how vibrant it was. I don't know if it's the sounds or, you know, the colours I was seeing. But I think you also gather that from, you know, when you watch it on TV. There's just something about Hopkinton that I think is quite striking. And that's the point it actually really hit me, that I was there to run the marathon. All of a sudden, sort of, you know, this announcement came on the tannoy. You know, could we turn and look at, you know, sort of the closest American flag to us, and the national anthem was then sung. And I was kind of like, wow, this is it. Yeah, this feels awesome.
Yeah, they do that so well, don't they, in the US. They really do enjoy the kind of party atmosphere, the patriotism, the sort of sense of occasion. I think they do it fantastically well, particularly in the start. And it's quite hard not to get drawn into it, I think. And in your case, I think it's probably a really good thing to get drawn into it because of these struggles. You know, it's like, this is you being alive.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Again, like that to me was the main overriding thought I tried to have on the start line was, you know, I've already sort of achieved what I wanted to achieve. Just go out there and enjoy it. I also didn't want to sort of have a bad race. Nobody wants to, but I didn't feel the pressure. Again, I think, as I sort of mentioned earlier, to go out there and run a good time, you know, relatively speaking. I knew if I got to the finish line, you know, with a smile on my face, I would have had a good race either way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now for you, the race itself, because you're an experienced trail runner and have done lots of hardcore, long endurance events, which I could list, but I'm not going to. Can't remember all the crazy things that you've done. But multi-hours, yeah, multi-day events, all that sort of stuff. So for you, a sort of three-hour road race is, you know, a piece of cake. No, it's not a piece of cake. It never is it? Because we're always challenging ourselves. But for you, Boston, the thought of it being hilly, probably didn't strike fear into you in the same way as it might do for others.
No, yeah, that's correct. So, yeah, I think given the majority of, you know, sort of running I've done and do, like, I'm used to varied terrain and going up and downhill. I think somewhat my legs are used to that as well. But again, it's funny because with London, but also Boston, I sort of think to myself that, oh yeah, I'm used to being on my feet for, you know, for hours, even a day or more. But come race day, you know, still on the start line, it's just something about that marathon distance which still is to me quite daunting. I think it's even though I might be out there for way less time, I think it's just the distance and having to sustain the effort you do, or, you know, your marathon pace for that long. But in terms of the terrain, again, I felt quite comfortable with what was ahead. But the more I got closer to race day, the more I started reading a bit more about the hills, and I started to wonder, okay, what are they going to be like? It sort of did turn out that they were just a different type of challenge. Yeah, a different type of hill. The only type of hill you could get 20 miles into a road marathon. But having, I think, got through, you know, the Newton Hills, I thought they were going to bite a bit harder. But again, that might have been down to the experience I've had in terms of, you know, sort of climbing, you know, bigger hills off-road. Or in terms of my training, I was making sure that I was doing all the sessions I did do, you know, over on, you know, that loop in the Olympic Park by the Velodrome that has down one straight of it. Not a steep climb, but, you know, one that you do feel after so many reps. So I think, you know, in summary, I sort of did sort of try to replicate that a bit. I can't really explain what those hills are like, and I think everyone needs to experience them at some point.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think they do, because I think it's one of those things where you look on a, and I'll say this to other people too, but you look on a profile map, you go, well, they don't look too bad, and it's net downhill overall. And even
that's exactly what I did.
Yeah, even Heartbreak Hill at 20 miles, you think, well, that's not that bad. It's just where it is on the course, as in, you know, 20 miles in. But it's the aggregation of all of them that's the
thing. That's it.
That's the thing that catches people out, I think. And the net downhill is not that helpful in that sense, because it's downhill where people typically find it hard. I mean, I suspect you found it easier, as you say, because of your mountain experience. But I think for lots of people, it's the downhill that's hard, because you don't tend to train that. So you train the up, and people work on the up, but don't think about the impact of what happens as you go down, which makes it particularly challenging. And like I say, it's the aggregation rather than any individual hill.
Yeah, with that in mind, like that first 10K as well, like where it is mostly downhill. I think I was just letting people go past me at that point. I was just had in my mind that, okay, I might sort of see you later. And that might have been the case. Yeah, it's so important, you know, on this course, as with any marathon. And I had it wrote on my arm actually from the days, you know, we were training, or you were sort of coaching me to run Manchester. Yeah, sort of be patient, and then below that, be courageous. So I was looking at that when the hills came.
Oh, brilliant. I mean, the patience message always works for a marathon, I think, in any instance, you know, hold back. And we hear that a lot, but I think it's especially true in Boston, because it is, like you say, it's downhill first 5K, certainly, maybe first 10K downhill. And the temptation is to allow gravity to push you down the hill and fly and pick up some pace. But you soon run into trouble, and it soon starts to really hurt the quads a bit later into the race, and you can't take that into account. So I think with Boston, we have to use those hills early on to conserve energy, not to pick up pace and use it later. So yeah, that was a smart thing to do. Did you? What were your splits like? What did you get halfway in?
Yeah, no, good question. In terms of my splits, I approached the race, and I think I followed something you wrote about in an old blog post about having total time or lap time and average lap pace on my watch. And then I was lapping every 30 minutes. And it worked out that the fifth, you know, the fifth chunk of 30 minutes was my quickest split.
Wow,
so,
yeah.
And that included most of those hills. So I really let rip there. And then it felt like I was holding on a bit to get to Ballston Street. But no, in terms of like getting to halfway, I think I did that in 1:27:05.
Okay, so you ran a negative split.
Yeah. And then, yeah, came home in 1:26:16. So, yeah, I didn't immediately sort of know that. I was just, yeah, sat having a beer afterwards. And I was like, noticed, you know, the increase I had in that fifth sort of split of the 30 minutes. And I was like, surely there's a negative split in there. So Googled, you know, a time calculator, put the numbers in there. And yeah, it came out that, yeah, negative split at Boston. And I was, couldn't believe it.
Yeah, that is amazing. Because I was talking to someone about that this morning, actually, that I think that generally speaking, for London, let's say, people tend to run, the average is something like a 4-5% positive split. For Boston, I'd love to know what it was. You know, it'd be significantly more than that, I should think. So to run a negative split, first time having done Boston, I think is a brilliant performance. That smile across the finish line that you were looking for, you must have felt good.
Yeah, I think that is something that will stay with me for quite some time. It's just that experience of turning the corner onto Ballston Street. And obviously from there, I think it's 400 metres and the finish line doesn't really feel like it's getting any closer, but you do make your way there. I think one of the things I, you know, do remember is just the noise. It was like incredible coming at you from both sides of the street. But yeah, that finish line is truly special. I think it's obviously painted onto the road. And so in the days leading up to it, everyone is swarming the finish line for photos. Quite a lot of people cross the finish line as well before the race, which is something I didn't do. I only wanted to cross it after getting there, having run the 26 miles from Hopkinton.
Yeah, definitely. Earn that finish.
Yeah, definitely. But no, I can remember like getting really close. I was like, right, need to lift my arms up, like enjoy this. And my arms just felt so heavy, which was quite funny. But yeah, cross the line, you know, stop my watch, put my hands on my knees. And then I think I just turned back just to watch other people finish and just take that in. And then as you do, like you sort of make your way through, grab your foil blanket, you know, grab your bag, and then hits home a bit. Like you've done it. You look at that medal around your neck with the unicorn on it and you're like, I've got one.
Yeah. And
which is pretty cool.
It's really cool. And you nailed the race as well. That's the other thing. And from you, for the journey that you've been on, I think it's an amazing story. So you go from difficult times before Christmas, wasn't it? It's December time. So some difficult personal times. You come through a difficult winter into the spring sunshine in Hopkinton, running a really good race, crossing that finishing line in good spirits. It hits you in waves, these things, doesn't it? But I can imagine how it might hit you as, wow, this is like not a transformation, but a, I don't know, you said it before, a realisation that you've got some stability and more than that, actually, you're capable of amazing things.
Yeah, no, that is it. I think that is my main takeaway, you know, from the Boston Marathon, is that the race itself was, again, like a celebration of becoming, you know, sort of stronger again, for sure. With that in mind, I think it's kind of nice, I think, how for different people, Boston means different things. And I think that for me was sort of my experience, my aim was to use the race, the week, as a celebration of working through some more sort of personal struggles. And it might be, you know, I go back and sort of make an effort to sort of run, I don't know, a faster time on that course, purely from a running performance perspective. But no, I'm definitely sort of proud of the race I ran and the trip I made, for sure. And it's just something I want other people to experience. So,
I mean, it is brilliant. And what I really like about it is this sense that for you now, you'll always have that memory, right? So that's the key thing about when we run marathons, is once it's done, no matter what the performance level is or what the experience is like, nobody can ever take it away from you. And you've now run in a Boston negative split in amazing conditions off the back of some difficult times for you. And I'm thinking, if I were you, I'd be going, right, that medal means something more than any other medal in lots of ways.
Yeah.
You know, hanging in a place that's prominent as a reminder to yourself as to how you can overcome troubles, how you can overcome difficulties, whatever it is. You are resilient, basically. You are a resilient man to get through what you've got through and nail that.
Yeah, no, yeah, appreciate it. And yeah, that medal is next to me at the moment. It's on my desk where I work when I'm at home. And yeah, I mean, I put it next to sort of my London and Berlin medals. But yeah, I think it's one to look at. And again, it means so much more than, you know, the marathon itself. I guess, yeah, that unicorn, yeah, is a symbol of those things you've just mentioned there. And, you know, some people, you know, straight away put their medals in a box out the way. But no, I think this is a good one just to have close to me, just to remind me of the fact that, yeah, I can sort of get through some tough moments, but also, yeah, complete some, you know, sort of challenging races and come out stronger, you know, out the other side of them for sure.
Yeah. Great. That's fantastic. Well, we'll leave interview stuff there. That's really cool. Right, go and have a great day and weekend, and I'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, we'll do, yeah. Speak soon, Steve.
So there we go. Boston for James was a celebration, but in a different way from the others. And everyone has a unique experience when it comes to a marathon and when it comes to life. And I'm so pleased for James that he was able to enjoy running Boston in the way that he did. And was so thoughtful about it afterwards. And that's the thing with Boston. It is different. It is unique. It's a celebration. And it's a party. We heard how crazy the Americans go for it. How the Bostonians come out in their numbers to celebrate it. But we also heard it's really important to take it seriously. Pace it properly, pace it well. Not necessarily so you can run fast, or that might be the case. So that you can enjoy the experience. And so that you can have those memories that no one will ever take away from you. And remember that amazing insight. Don't go past anyone in the first 5 to 10K. You do that and you'll enjoy the experience and have that day that no one will ever be able to erase. Amazing. Thanks for bearing with me and for listening to the guests. I hope that was useful, interesting, maybe a bit inspiring, and a good one to return to next spring when you're thinking about the Boston Marathon. But for now, I'm going to leave you, and I'm going to look forward to speaking to you again very soon. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.